Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Chaf Aleph of Melachim Bet, a Perek that changes direction fairly abruptly, since Menashe, the focused king for most of the Perek, is a fairly abrupt turn from his father Chizkiah. The Perek opens up by saying, Ben Shtemesre Shana Menashe V'molcho, V'chamishim V'chamesh Shana Malach B'Yushalayim V'shem Yimo Chefziva. He's 12 when he becomes king, and he rules for 55 years, a long time, and he and his mother's name was Cheftiba. So the birth of Menashe is an interesting story, because we notice from the Pshat of the Psukim that he was born after his father's illness, right? Yeshayahu had told Chizkiyahu that he was going to die, and then Chizkiyahu davens to Hashem, and it turns out that he gets 15 more years, and then he dies. And then Menashe is 12 years old when he takes over the rule. If so, he was not yet born when his father became ill, and when apparently Hashem had said he was going to die. The Gemara tells a story about that in Brachot, that Yeshayahu comes to Chizkiyahu and tells him he's going to die, and he says, why? And he says, because you refuse to have children. Chizkiyahu says, well, I saw that my children would become evil. Yeshayahu says, you don't have the right to make that decision. You have to do what Hashem told you. That's an interesting topic for another time, but you have to do what Hashem told you. That's your job. Chizkiyahu says, fine, give me your daughter to marry, and maybe between the two of us we'll be able to produce a good child. Yeshayahu says, it's too late, because the gzera is already nigzar. The decree was already made, and you're dying now. And then he goes out, and then Chizkiyahu davens, as we've seen, and then the decree gets changed, and the Gemara portrays Yeshayahu as being surprised. And he says, how did you know that? How did you know that you could do such a thing? And Chizkiyahu says to him, because I have a tradition from my father and grandfather's household that there's always time for rachamim, and that even if the decree seems to be made, you can always have rachamim. That's a theme that we should consider in this parak later, when Hashem begins to decree the fact that the southern kingdom as well is going to exile, and we're going to have that whole discussion. So that idea that there's always a way to either change it or to mitigate it or to lessen it is one that we will need to keep in mind. So that's what Chizkiyahu says to Yeshayahu. That's the way they portray it. And the truth is, elsewhere portrays it as that they were twins, and that when Chizkiyahu was carrying them on his back to take them to cheder, to, you know, yeshiva, to learn and to become good, what we would call fine, frime yidden, he hears them on their back talking about how to worship Avodah Zarah. Meaning in the Gemara's portrayal that somehow Menashe and this twin brother were evil from their very beginnings. And Chizkiyahu was so upset and so shocked by this that he drops them, and one of them dies and Menashe is the other one. So buried in these stories is the question of why it is that Menashe is so evil. If you watch the history that we've been seeing, we had seen Uzziyahu was a king who is seen by the Tanakh as being good, except that he spends much of the end of his life with tzara'at, with leprosy, and he gets it because, at least in the Divrei Yamim's portrayal, because he had tried to go into the Beis HaMikdash when it wasn't appropriate for him. He had tried to serve where it wasn't his place, so that's not a perfect way of handling it. Then there was Yotam, who was good. Then there's Achaz, who was terrible. Then there's Chizkiyahu, who was very, very good. And now we're going to see Menashe, who is again terrible. And so this back and forth, and we're not the home stretch, it's going to be another 100 years before the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, but we're in the ending stage of Malchut Yehuda. We had suggested that Chizkiyahu might have been the end of Malchut Yehuda if not for his remarkable turnaround, and that would sort of explain the course of Yeshayahu's career in a relatively parallel way to Yirmiyahu's career, except that Yeshayahu had the good fortune of having Chizkiyahu, who turns it around. So, and that would explain why Chazal would have wondered whether Chizkiyahu was Mashiach. So this Menashe, at first glance, seems tremendously surprising. But if we think about the course of what's going on in Yehuda, perhaps not. And then that puts Chizkiyahu into a different light as well, because it means that Chizkiyahu's turnaround is all that much more remarkable. So Menashe has issues, but even as we watch him do evil, so let's turn to Pasuk Bet, Vayasa Rabbeinu Hashem, Ki Tu'avot HaGoyim Asher Horish Hashem B'nei Yisrael. He does evil like all the abominations of the surrounding nations that God had removed from before the Jewish people in Pasuk Gimel, Vayashov, Vayiven, and Abamot. He goes back and he rebuilds the Bamot, the altars where they could sacrifice. These we think are probably to Hashem. Asher Ibad Chizkiyahu Aviv, that his father had destroyed. Vayaka Mizbechot LaBaal, and he makes altars to the Baal. Vayasa Shera, and he makes an Asherah. Kasher Asa Achav Melch Yisrael, as Achav, the king of Israel, had done. Vayishtachol Chol Tzavah Shemayim, Vayavodatam, and he bows down to all the hosts of heaven, and he serves them. Pasuk Dalet, Vanav Mizbechot Beveit Hashem, and he builds altars in the house of God. Asher Amar Hashem B'Yerushalayim Asim Atshmi, where Hashem had said, I'm going to leave, put my name, or stamp my name in Jerusalem. Pasuk Hey, so when he gets through all of his evils, and then we can think about it. Vayiven Mizbechot L'chol Tzivah Hashemayim, he builds altars to all of the hosts of heaven, B'shtei Chatzot Beit Hashem, in the two courts of the Beit HaMikdash. Pasuk Vav, V'havirat Beno Ba'ish, V'onein V'nicheish, he puts his son through the fire, and he does divination, and he does sorcery, Masa Ovi Yidonim, and various seances, and ways of talking to the dead. Hirba La'asot HaRab V'nei Hashem Na'achis, he did much to do what's evil in God's eyes, and he did some of it, at least some of it, lahachis. Lahachis meaning that he, and so Pasuk Zion is an example of Ayasan Pesal Asher Asher Asaba Bayat Asher Mashem Al David Shalomo Vino Bayat Asher Vishalayim Asher Bacharti Mikol Shute Israel Asim Et Shmile Olam. So lahachis means he does it on purpose. So we always think it means he does it to make Hashem angry. But, and here, Vayasman, he puts the idol of the Asherah that he had made in the Beit HaMikdash, where Hashem had said to David and to Shlomo, Shlomo built the Bayit, in this house and in Yerushalayim, which I have chosen from among all of the tribes of the Jewish people, I will place my name forever. Now we're going to still quote Hashem in Pasuk Chet. V'lo'osif lahanid regal Yisrael min ha'adama asher natati l'avotam, and I will never again make the Jewish people leave the land, meaning leave permanently, meaning get exile, the land that I gave their forefathers, and then the condition that we haven't been able to fulfill, as long as they are careful to do all that I have commanded them, and to keep the Torah that I commanded them through, or that Moshe, my servant, commanded them. When the Jews can't listen, they've never been able to do that. And Moshe leads them astray to do the evil, to do the evil, and he learns it from the nations that God had destroyed before the Jewish people. So this is a lot of evil, and it's just unclear how such evil comes about. How does it happen that Menashe finds his way to doing such evil? So one possibility is you could just say he's evil, but then that would, that, and that might be true, but it suggests, and he's rebelling against his family tradition, because Yeshayahu is a monotheist for sure. We assume that his mother, meaning Yeshayahu's daughter, in the Gemara's reading, Heftiba, is a good woman, monotheist. She's married to Chizkiyahu, who we know is a good guy. So there's some family rebellion going on here. But I don't think that's the whole story, and it's not the whole story in the way the Gemara understands the story either. So for one example, and then the more famous one I'll give you in a second. For one example, the Gemara Sanhedrin of Kuf Gimel Amid Bed says Tanu Rabbanan Minasha Yashonech Chamishim V'Chamisha Panim B'Torat Kohanim Kineged Shnei Malchuto. Minasha was Mechadesh. Gave new chidushim and a novel interpretation, 55 novel interpretations of the book of Vayikra. Meaning, and they say, one for every year of his reign. Meaning, while he's doing all this, he's also learning Torah in such a productive way that he's finding a new vision, a new understanding, a new and a positively new, and new in a way that we would be happy to learn of Vayikra every year. So, Tuthu Mor tells a story earlier in Sanhedrin in Kuf Bet Amid Bet. Of Ashi says, you know, tomorrow we're going to talk about three kings who maybe have lost their share in the world to come. We'll talk about the issue of losing their share to the world to come in a minute, a few minutes. And he says, we're going to talk about them. And he calls them Chavrin, our colleagues. So I might have called them our evildoers. So Rashi calls them colleagues, meaning they were like us, except they're not going to get a share in the world to come. Menashe, the king, comes to him in a dream. He says, you call me your colleague, you don't know anything. He says to him, what part of the bread do you make hamotzi from? And the guy says, I don't know. So he tells him the answer. The answer is you have to do it from the outside, not from the middle. You have to do it from the outside, from a place where it first sort of showed the baking process to be coming to fruition. And he says, and you don't even know that, and you're going to call me your chavi, you're calling me your colleague. So he says, I understand. If you know so much, why is it that you worship the Avodah Zarah? So Menashe's answer is, you would have grabbed the bottom of your robe to run after me. So the next day when he gets to the base of Medrash, he says, Niftach Biravati, let's talk about our rabbis, meaning our great scholars, who may or may not have a share in the world to come. It's not that he changed his mind about the share of the world to come issue, but that was the issue. So I think that it's appropriate to think that the Gemara's understanding of Menashe is, first, that the temptation to Avodah Zarah was one that we do not understand anymore. It's lost, it's been killed, it's been destroyed. We just don't get it. That's what the Gemara seemed to think, and that Menashe is not a person who simply ignored his father and didn't learn from his father's lesson. What happened with Menashe is that, in addition to his father's lessons, he absorbed this idea from the surrounding nation of pluralism, of many gods, of having to worship all gods, and that worship being vital and necessary for the way the world works. So if that's true, then Lahachi is here, I think, doesn't mean Menashe woke up every morning and said, how can I anger God? How can I upset God? Menashe woke up every morning and thought, all the idols have to be brought together. And if we put that into a sort of a modern idiom, it would be inappropriate, it would be wrong of Menashe to neglect, he would be saying, it would be wrong of me to neglect some forms of worship, as if my worship of one God outweighs other forms. All these nations have gods. I have to respect their gods too. That's the way I understand it. Maybe I'm being too modern in my understanding. I will say, as we've gone on and as we approach the end of Sefer Melachim, I'm being a little freer with thinking about myself. I will say that I have some stories now that I'm looking to get published, and one of them tries to portray exactly this idea, that we tend to think of Menashe as evil, and then evil people wake up in the morning, they look in the mirror, and they say, oh, I'm evil, I'm just bad. But I think that Menashe would have looked himself in the mirror for much of his life and said, I'm good. You have to worship all these gods, including God, including the Beis HaMikdash. And, oh, God said not to put an idol on the Beis HaMikdash, but that was an old way of looking at the worship of God, the idea that there's one single truth. That's the old model. And then he went for producing the new model and making the new and better model the reigning model. That's what I think is perhaps going on. So if you look at Pasuk Yud, Vayidaber Hashem b'yad Avadav Nevi'im Lemor, Hashem speaks to him through his servants, the prophets. Rashi and Radak point out the tradition is that these prophets are Yoel, Nachum, and Chabakuk, so that will inform our reading of those Nevi'im when we see them, because they don't explicitly tell us where they reign. Rashi points out they were not mentioned that they did it in his 55 years because it was a favor to them not to mention to everybody they had to spend their entire careers working with a king who was so evil. So Hashem speaks to him through them, and he says in Pasuk Yalav, Ya'an Asher Asa Min Hashem Melech Yudah To'evoto Eile, since Menashe has done all these terrible things, Hey Rami Kol Asher Asu Amori Asher Lefanav, he's worse than the Amori. It's pretty bad. The Amori got kicked out of Israel a long time before because of their evils. Ve'achati Gam Yehuda Bigilu Lav, and he also led the Jewish people to sin with all of his terrible doings, with all of his idols. Now that idea of leading the Jewish people to sin is one to consider as well, and to see what we mean. Apparently the Navi is assuming that Menashe bears much of the blame, but the Jewish people are also going to bear many of the consequences, because they're the ones who are also going to get sent into exile, but the point is that they are so malleable that Chizkiyahu requires them to learn Torah and to follow the Torah and keep the Torah, and then they do. And then Menashe comes along, and he says, okay, change the plan. We're not going to worship idols, we're going to worship Baal, we're going to worship Asherah, and there's no hue and cry, there's no jumping up and saying, what are you talking about? This isn't our tradition, these aren't our ways. And by virtue of following our leaders, whoever they may be, we bear the consequences of following our leaders, whoever they may be. So I think this is an example of that, that the Jewish people's following nature, and we, today in the world, say, well, whoever it is just, they're just following their leaders, you can't blame them. So if people followed, an example that's relevant today, if people follow Saddam Hussein and did what he said to them, there are certainly those in the world today who would say, you can't really blame them for what they did. You can't see them as morally culpable in what they did. And the same would be true for Palestinians or for whoever follows their leads to do evil. You can't blame them for it. So here, I think we see that that's not true, that the people are going to lose out by virtue of their following Menashe. So watch this in Pesach Yudbet. Lachein Kamar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Hinani mevi ra'al Yerushalayim v'Yehuda, asher kol shom'ach Titzal Nashte Oznav, I'm going to bring an evil, a terrible disaster on Jerusalem and Yehuda, that anyone who hears it, his ears will ring from the terribleness of what's going to be. Menatati al Yerushalayim eight kav shamron ve'mishkol beit achav u'machiti Yerushalayim kashim chet atzalachat machav v'hafach al paneha. I'm going to bring on Yerushalayim the kav, the measuring line of Shamron, and the mishkolet, the plumb line of Beit Achav, machiti, and I'm going to wipe out Jerusalem completely. As you wipe away a plate and you turn it upside down to make sure they get everything out of it. So that's a mixing of metaphors. Right, the kav, the measuring line, and the mishkolet are building tools. So it's interesting that Hashem uses the metaphor of building tools to say, this is, I'm going to make sure, I'm going to judge them and make sure that they get completely destroyed. I wonder whether the use of the metaphor of building tools, however, was to suggest that this is what we call in Hilchot Shabbos terms a harisa, a stira, al menat leave note. It's a destruction for the purpose of rebuilding, right? In Hilchot Shabbos terms, we always talk about the fact that if you do something completely for a destructive purpose with no constructive purpose whatsoever, so that's mekalkel. It's not a malachet machshevet. It's not an actual creative act in Hilchot Shabbat terms. So here, when Hashem is going to destroy the Jewish commonwealth in Malchut Yehuda, I wonder whether the metaphor of kav and mishkolet are to tell us. And the same thing with a dish. When you wipe a dish clean and you turn it over, you're trying to get anything out of it, but then you're going to use the dish again. Well, there's already an indication that this isn't meant as a destructive act, but as a constructive act. Menatashti, if you look at Pasuk Yidala, Menatashti, Echeri, Nachalati, I will leave, abandon what's left over me. We've already lost Malchut Yisrael. The majority of the Jewish people have already gone into exile. Now I'm going to leave the rest of them. Unetatim Yadavihim, giving them in their hands their enemies. Vayu Labaz, Ulim Shisa, Lecholoi Vehem, they will be open so that any of their enemies can come and attack them and destroy them and punish them and take away from them. And why is this happening? In Pasuk Tedvav, Ya'an Hashir Asu Atara Be'inai Vayu Machisimoti, because they've done what's evil in my eyes and they've been angering me. Min Hayom Asher Yatzu Avotam Yitzayim Adiyom Azen. It's been really from the time their forefathers have left Egypt. So again, when you have Nevuah like this, there is a tendency in some circles to say, how is Hashem so vengeful and so upset and so bothered and so harsh, and he punishes so much? Why would that happen? Why does Hashem have to do that? So part of what's going on here is Hashem is pointing out that this is a pattern that has never been broken with any solidity. There's never been a solid time when Hashem would just look at the Jewish people and say, yes, they're doing that which I have asked them to do. It simply doesn't occur from the time that left Egypt. So the time of Dov and Amalek was a good time. The time of Shlomo Amalek was largely a good time, with the end being a problem time. And then you have the split. And then in the Malchut Yehuda as well, you have the Bamot, and then you have some bad kings, and you have this, and you have that. So it's inaccurate to say that there was ever a solid, sustained period of time where the Jews just did what Hashem wanted. And so now at this juncture, Hashem is saying, so because of that, I'm not going to take it anymore. V'gam dam naki, Pasuk Ted Zayin, V'gam dam naki shafach menashe harbe me'od. Menashe killed many innocent people, is what the Pasuk says. Chazal's tradition was that this is a veiled reference to the fact that Menashe killed his grandfather. So that is an incident that that is an incident that the Gemara in Yevamot portrays at greater length, and the way it presents it gives more insight, I think, to Menashe. Right? We've said that Menashe in the Gemara in Sanhedrin appears as somebody who has a lot of Torah and yet does all these kinds of things. The Gemara in Sanhedrin also, when it refers to the pesel, to the idol that he put into the Beit HaMikdash, the Gemara says he does it lachakis. And then it points out that Rav Yochanan says Achaz put it in like an attic in an upper room, and Menashe brings that out into the open area. So that idea suggests that, earlier I said, how could Menashe have done this? It says that Menashe chose for some reason to follow that grandfather's way of life, that grandfather's choices, rather than the grandfather he ideally should have followed, the grandfather on his other side of Yeshayahu. And then we see the tradition is that he killed the other grandfather. Now when he kills the other grandfather, the Gemara doesn't just say he kills the other grandfather because he decides he hates the other grandfather. The Gemara says in Yevamot on Mem Tet Amud Bet, the Gemara says, Amar Rava Meidan Dainei V'Katna, he judged him and then killed him. Amrale, he says to him, Moshe Rabbach Amar. Moshe says, Kilo Irani Hadam V'chai. Right? And the Torah says that Hashem says to Moshe, no man can see Hashem and live. And Yishayahu says, V'aret Hashem Yosheva K'tei Rami Nisna. Moshe Rabbach Amar, V'aret Hashem Yosheva K'tei Rami Nisna means I saw Hashem sitting on a high and mighty throne. Moshe Rabbach Amar, by the way, if you read that parak in Yishayahu, as we, this group will soon do, because Yishayahu is coming up very soon, Yishayahu doesn't actually describe Hashem when he says that. He describes the Heichal, he describes the scene around Hashem, but there's not a significant description of Hashem. We will, I hope, God willing, to be doing Sefer Yechezkel with this group as well. We will in Yechezkel see a fairly detailed description. I have to struggle with what that means and try to figure it out to the extent that we're able and allowed. But it's not an accurate reading of Yishayahu. Moshe Rabbah, but the Mark continues, Moshe Rabbah, Mika Hashem Elokeinu b'chol koreinu eliv, who's like our God who always answers us. At Amar Yishayahu says, Yeshua Hashem himatzo, speak to God or seek God when he's available. So that's an interesting question, right? Yishayahu says, seek us. So our tradition is that it's easier to seek Hashem at sometimes than at others, but we've seen that the family of Chizkiyahu, who Menashe is coming from, certainly emphasize the idea that Hashem is always available if you only call out in the right way. Moshe Rabbah Amar and Mispar Yamecha Amalei. Moshe said, Hashem will fill our days, will lengthen our days, make our days full. V'atamar v'osavti Yamecha Chamesh Shana. And he, Yishayahu, said, I'm going to add to your days to Chizkiyahu. So, in the Gemara, Yishayahu says, I know you're not going to answer me, and therefore I'm going to, and I know you're not going to listen to me, and if I tell you, you're going to become amazed, and so he runs away, and then Menashe kills him. But that whole portrayal, then, sees Menashe as thinking of himself. I'm not saying he was right, but thinking of himself as right when he kills Yishayahu. And I think that model is almost worse, scarier than our model. Our model of evil is people who are evil know they're evil. But I think very often the people who are evil think they're right. They come up with a rationale and a justification. They may be extremely educated. They may actually know stuff. So here Menashe is a mechadesh in Vayikra. He learns Vayikra well. He knows Vayikra well. As the Gemara's portrayal. I don't mean that, and this is the Gemara's understanding of him. He knows Vayikra well. He knows Hilchos Hamotzi better than Ravashi does. Ravashi's a pretty good guy. Ravashi doesn't know it. He knows it. He knows, and he knows Torah enough to point out to Yishayahu that there are contradictions. The contradictions could easily have been answered by Yishayahu, but Menashe believes he has caught Yishayahu in a misunderstanding of Torah. So again, if by the time this tape is being heard, my book has come out, which I doubt, but that would be nice. But that's that's an important idea. In a book that is out, Murderer in the Mikdash, available either by contacting me, groths@gmail.com, or you can get it online at amazon.com, but Murderer in the Mikdash, to have a figure who is corrupt in that way. He seems corrupt, but in his own mind, he's doing the right thing. Or at least, that's what it seems like. I'm not giving you the whole book away, but it seems like that. And some readers have been very bothered by that. They said, how could such a person be so corrupt? And the answer is that it's not true that corruption is so obvious to the people who are getting caught up in corruption. They think they're doing the right thing. And here, too, I wonder whether Menashe thinks he's doing the right thing, and that's part of the tragedy of Menashe. So in Pasuk Tzion, V'gam dam nochi shafach Menashe abrim yod, he kills many people, that's other strands in the Gemara, but, or Yishayahu, al shem yilei Yerushalayim pelafeh, until he filled Jerusalem from one end to the other, mouth to mouth. Levad mechatato asher chati Yudah, besides all the sins that he enticed or led the Jewish people into, lasot hara b'nei Hashem, to do the evil in the eyes of God. V'yet divrei Menashe v'chol asher asan, the rest of what Menashe did, mechatato asher chata, and his sins, halohim k'tuvim, al sefer divrei melachei Yudah, are written in the history books. Notice, if the sins are written in the history books, so it's two possibilities. Either the history books are also religiously written, although we haven't ever seen that before. We've thought of them in history books. Or he thought of the sins that he did as being so worthwhile, such a part of his legacy, that he had them written into the history books, which would confirm what I was suggesting before about Menashe, that it's not that he goes out saying, I know this is wrong and I'm going to do it. He decides this is right in the face of knowledge that it's wrong. He just decides that it's right. Vayishkav Menashe ima avotav. Menashe passes away, lies with his forefather, Vayikaver began beito began Uzzah, but he gets buried in the garden of his own house, in the garden of Uzzah, Vayimloch Hamon beno Tachtav, and then his son gets buried with him. So it's not clear why it is he doesn't get buried in the family burial plots, but Chazal have an interesting discussion in that same Gemara in Sanhedrin in Perek Chelek, why it comes up in Chelek, as to whether Menashe has a share in the world to come. So everything we've seen would suggest that he shouldn't have a share in the world to come. But Chazal point out that in the in Divrei Hayamim, the Psukim tell us that towards the end of his life, Menashe was exiled by the king of Bavel, and that while he was there, it's by the king of Bavel. Sorry, I looked it up in Divrei Hayamim. It's in Perek Lamed Gimel of Divrei Hayamim Bet. So it's Sarei HaTzavah, it's the officers of Shalom Melech Ashur, of the king of Ashur, but they could do it in Menashe. They capture Menashe, and they put him in chains, and they take him to Bavel. And when things are bad for him, the Pesukim there say, he turns to Hashem, and he is very submissive before Hashem, and he prays to Hashem, and he cries out to Hashem, and Hashem listens to him, and he returns him to Jerusalem, to his kingdom. And then Menashe knows, Ki Hashem Hu Elokim, and then it goes on from there. So the Gemara therefore claims that shows you that Menashe, one opinion where it says that shows you that Menashe does get a share in the world to come, because it does tshuva at the end. Interestingly, there's the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that when Rabbi Eliezer got ill, so four important rabbis came in to visit him and to help him out and to try to cheer him up. And Rabbi Tarfon tries to cheer him up by saying how great Rabbi Eliezer is for the Jewish people. Rabbi Yeshua does so too. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah does so too. And they're all telling him these ways in which he is such a benefit and asset to the Jewish people. So positive reinforcement. Rabbi Akiva says, Chavivin Yisurin. When you have troubles, when life is tough, it's good. It's good for you. So Rabbi Eliezer says, help me out. I have to listen to what Akiva's talking about. So he says, Akiva, what are you talking about? So Rabbi Akiva says, I'm just learning a pasuk. The Pesukim can tell us in our Perek that Menashe was 12 years old, and he does all this evil, right? And he does all this evil. And Chizkiyahu is his father. Chizkiyahu tried so hard to make him into a good Jew, and he has Yeshayahu for a grandfather, and none of it works. And then, when he has Yisurim, he returns to Hashem. So, there is some discussion there that might be what occurred in the case of Menashe, that at the end of his life, He returned to Hashem, and that it was Yisurim that were the cause of this. So we can hope, and if you like a more positive expression or more positive impression of our leaders, so that would be a nicer way to envision. In any case, Pasuk Yutet, Peinasvim Ushtaim Shana Amon Mocho, the next kingdom is that of Amon, and he is 22 years when he takes over. Ushtaim Shani Malach B'Yerushalayim, and he rules for 2 years. V'shem Imo Mishulemet Bat Charutz Min Yodva'ah, and his mother is Mishulemet Bat Charutz. I would just notice the prevalence of mothers, which seem to indicate that by this point, who your mother was an important piece of who you were, either politically, perhaps, or if the focus of Malachim is your spiritual and religious impact as a leader, maybe that the mothers had a lot of say in how their sons were raised and therefore how their sons came out, and that's why they're mentioning them. So if he's 22, that means he experienced 22 years of Menashe's reign. Depending on when Menashe did tshuva, and we'll talk about that in the next chapter, then he was largely influenced by his father, who was an evildoer, and the fact that at the end of his life his father returned seems not to have had an impact on Amon. He just follows what his father did. So Menashe had been doing what the nations around them did, what Achab did, right? Menashe had been looking for models outside of his family model, outside of his Chizkiyahu model. Amon is just following his family model, and he's worshiping all the idols that his father had worshipped, and he bows down to them. And he leaves Hashem, the God of his forefathers, and he does not go in their path. Something that's not quite said about Menashe. Menashe's lahachis. So that perhaps this is why Chazal understood Menashe knows what's going on with Hashem and is rebelling against it. Pasuk Kaf Gimel Vayikshu Avdei Amon Alav. The servants of Amon have a rebellion against him. Vayamitu Namelach Bebeito, and they kill the king in his household. So we've seen rebellions in Malchut Yehuda before. I think it's interesting that here it seems to be connected to the abandoning of Hashem. Meaning those who keep mitzvot and those who keep the Torah in the right way would not do such a thing, but here the servants do it against him because it's an idol worshiping culture. And Pasuk Kaf Dalet shows us the people stepping in. Vayach am ha'aretz kol ha'koshrim al ha'melech Amon. The people kill the rebels. So we've pointed out on other occasions that Malchut Yehuda, even when it had rebellions, always maintained the line and continued with Malchut Yehuda. In this case, it seems like the rebels, the people who were doing the coup, maybe thought, like the Northern Kingdom had, they thought maybe to take over themselves, and the people reject that. So we see another example, something I mentioned earlier, that we always absolve people of responsibility, Palestinians, Iraqis, whoever it may be, we absolve the people of responsibility, but you see that when the people have a line beyond which they're unwilling to cross, they get up and they do what's necessary to be done. So that's an important lesson here too. So they make Yoshiyahu be the king. And the rest of what Amon has done, did, is written in the books of the history books of Malchi Yehuda. They bury him in Ganuza. And Yoshiyahu becomes king in his place. Yoshiyahu will be, again, if we're having this back and forth towards the end, which is going to be this pattern for now, so this pattern is going to again come up in the case of Yoshiyahu, because he's going to be good and he's going to have a fairly long reign, and he's going to have the chance to turn around some of what we've seen, and then we'll have to see how that works out in the coming days. Have a great day.